Now, so let's talk about crossing the sea of suffering. So first, we say, why do we want to cross the sea of suffering? It's a suffering. There's something that we probably want to think about. Is there really an ocean of suffering that we want to cross? And so if there's an ocean of suffering and we are drowning in the ocean of suffering, why do we talk about helping others? Didn't we want to make sure that we got saved ourselves first before we can help others? So that's a question that a lot of people tend to ask. Why do we want to care about helping others first? We need to make sure that we ourselves are saved before we can help others. So it is very important for us to understand why we say that while we cross the ocean of suffering, we should not neglect others as well. Now, so let's go back to the Buddha story. We all are here listening to the Buddha's teaching, and that we learn from the Buddha's teachings. Now, let's think about the Buddha. Why did he leave the palace in search of the truth? Why did he want to leave the palace to find the truth? He had a very comfortable life in the palace, all kinds of enjoyment. His name is Siddhartha, wishes fulfilled. His father hopes that all wishes will be fulfilled. So why did he still want to leave the palace in search of the truth? He's not satisfied with the enjoyment in the palace.
Because he wants to help others.
So if, I suppose all of you knows about the story of the Buddha, so briefly, alright? So there are a few incidents in his life that make him think about the imperfection of the life that we are living in. So the first incident was when he was young. He went to a harvest festival and he saw how the farmer plowed the field and the buffalo loosened the ground, and there were earthworms and bird flew down to eat the earthworms. And so at that time he was sitting there and looking at this scene, he feel, if you were the prince, what would you feel? Bird eat the earthworms, eagle eat the small bird, what would you feel? It's natural. It's just as such. And that's what happened to most of us. When we look at it, we just feel like, well, this is a natural, kids will tell me it's a food chain. They say it's a food chain. It's just as such. We just take for granted that it's natural. But for the prince, he was sitting under the tree looking at this. He feel very sad. He feel the pain of the earthworm being eaten. He also feel the pain of the little bird being eaten by the eagle. That sharing the feelings of others. He has this strong compassion since he was very young. The earthworms like to be happy. The little bird likes to be happy. But why must the little bird impose suffering on the earthworms? Yes, we understand that the little bird is hungry, is not comfortable, but why is this world that we're living in as such? So this is a food change in among the probably the living creatures. But if you look at the world that we're living in, it's the same thing. We say fittest survive. So we try to make ourselves strong, suppress others to gain our happiness. And living creatures fight with one another. This is not that nice at all. So the prince at that time, he have not realized the truth, but he thought, why are we living in a world as such? We all like to be peaceful and happy, but why are living creatures killing each other? That is the first incident. Second incident that he encountered was that he visited the country. He saw someone who was very old, an old beggar, walking, bending his body, no teeth, wrinkled face, grey hair, walking slowly. He thought, why is this person as such? This is an aged person. He was young and strong, so he haven't suffered. He haven't suffered from old age. But he feel he share the feelings of the aged people. And that's why he feels sad. We all like to stay young and healthy all the time. But why do we need to age? And the second incident that this is for the fourth scene, he also saw a sick man, a person who was very, very sick, crying for pain. Again, we like to be healthy, but why do we fall sick sometimes? And the third time, he saw a dead person. A person, people just throw him into the fire and being cremated and leave this world forever. So he thought, why is it as such? Are we living in this world? Are we born in this world? Fight with one another, get what we want, and then at the end, age, sickness, and death. So if life is as such, what is the real meaning of life? We spend so much time fighting and fighting, get what we want. At the end, all of us will have to die. If you look at the world they're living in, same thing. A lot of people fight when they were young, for wealth, for heritage, for their business. At the end, when they come to the age 50, 60, they have to give up their business and go to nursing home, wait for their time. So think about it. What is the purpose then? Is there better meaning in our life than this? So that is the second incident we call the fourth sin. And so these two incidents make him think a lot. And there was another incident so he was thinking about all these questions. He started to go into his deep thoughts all the time. And his father was very worried about him. So his father tried to entertain him, tried to cheer him up by giving him a lot of entertainment. So there were dancers dancing in front of him, musicians playing music in front of him every day, throughout the day and night. So one day, he went to a rest. The dancer just lie around in the hall because the order was that they're supposed to entertain the prince until he's happy. So they just lie around in the hall. The prince has gone to rest. But in the middle of the night, the prince wake up and come to the hall. And he saw these ladies lying around, looking not as beautiful as they were in the daytime. In the daytime, their makeup was beautiful, their hair was tidy and neat, their dress was tidy and neat. When they're lying around, the hair is messy, the makeup is messy, and the dress is messy. It's ugly. That made him think, suddenly realize, what is this beauty about? Thinking about the world that we're living in, if you studied history before, there are history where emperor fight for beautiful girl, and because of that, they can even ruin their own country. Or sometimes some emperor or king just want a certain beautiful person, and they start a fight. And think about it, but this beauty, daytime is so beautiful, and night is as such. And we spend so much time fighting for it. You all read a lot of news. Boyfriends fight to have the girl, or the girl fight to have a boyfriend, and sometimes murder happen, right? A lot of killing happen. But at the end of the day, what you are chasing after is so not everlasting. But this is the world that we're living in. We are living in a world where we have so much frustration, chasing after things in a silly way. So what is the real meaning of life? And this is what the prince feels. Imperfection, frustration in life. That life, what is the meaning of life? Why do we caught ourselves in all this fighting, restlessness all the time? Why are we chasing after so many things all the time and make us feel so stressful? So, it was not because he himself was suffering at that time. He was not sick. He was not having old age at that time, right? He was not fighting with anyone at that time. But he shared the feelings of others. And so this compassion, the ability to share the feelings of others, putting yourself in others' position and cannot stand others in suffering, that you really feel that you want to relieve others from suffering. This is what we meant by compassion, to relieve others from suffering and hope that everyone can be peaceful and happy. And this is really the main drive that the Buddha, the prince, he cannot endure seeing the suffering of all sentient beings, and this problem just left there unsolved. He hopes to relieve beings from suffering and bring happiness to all. So that actually shows the kind of mind he has. So when we want to learn from the Buddha, we need to reflect the path of practice that he has gone through, and that what do we want to learn from him. So this great compassion is something that we need to learn. Because now that we have learned the Buddha's teaching, a lot of time we know that, yes, we heard about the Four Noble Truths. We say life is suffering. There's all this frustration. It comes from our greed, anger, hatred, jealousy, selfishness. So, and at the end of the day, the main problem comes from this ignorance about ourselves, this self-centeredness. Because of this self-centeredness, we become very self-defensive, self-protective, and that's why greed, hatred, jealousy, arrogance all develop. So being able to learn about compassion is actually something that we need to learn to that can help us to reduce our self-centeredness. Be able to put yourself in others' position, can't stand others having suffering, that you want to relieve others from suffering, putting others as a priority that rather than yourself is a way to reduce our self-centeredness. So, what example has the Buddha shown us? So first is that his great compassion in sharing the feelings of others, hope to relieve others from suffering. And after he understand the suffering of sentient being, he set a great determination that he want to practice. And that's why we say he tried different approach, and finally he went to Bodhigaya, sat under the Bodhi tree. He made a strong vow to himself: if I do not attain enlightenment, I will not get up from this seat. Now, that determination to practice and attain enlightenment is the great determination of him. But why did he want to attain enlightenment? So he says, after he saw all these sufferings, he finally left the palace in search of the truth, not because he wanted to run away from palace to have more freedom and enjoyment, but rather because he wanted to find the truth to solve the problems that everyone is facing. So it is out of great compassion that he left the palace, and he wanted to find the truth so that he can help sentient beings. So the determination in himself is that he wants to attain enlightenment and help sentient beings. And this is what we call the Bodhi mind, the great Bodhi mind of attaining enlightenment and to help sentient beings. And so the example that the Buddha showed us is that we want to improve ourselves and attain enlightenment, and it is important for us to look upon the Buddha as our role model, hope that we can realize the truth and understand that, in fact, everyone of us, everyone around us, can also be free from suffering. So it is just like the Buddha who have attained enlightenment. After he attained enlightenment, at the age of 35, he walked along the two banks of Ganges River to help and guide sentient beings. Why did he do that? Because he understand that all sentient beings has a potential to practice. All sentient beings can attain enlightenment. So he tried to help them as much as he can. Of course, how much a person can progress also depends on the acceptance levels of the person and the effort they put in, the person wants to put in. But the Buddha tried his best in helping others. So what we want to learn from the Buddha is that besides attaining enlightenment ourselves, besides improving ourselves, we also want to make sure that we learn his great compassion in helping others. So there are three things that we need to learn from the Buddha: his great determination or great strength in the great motivation in learning. That's very important. And then secondly, his great compassion. And thirdly, his great wisdom. His wisdom of understanding the truth. Because you can see that these three are very, very important. So first is the body mind, or the body vow, or the body determination. Alright? So because that is like a will, your will to look upon the attainment of Buddhahood as your goal, and at the same time the vow of helping and guiding sentient beings. That's like a drive, a will. That's very important. And but this will will be can that this will need to be strengthened, or the energy of this will also come from our great compassion. Because the more compassionate you are, and then plus you see the Buddha as your role model, that's how the strength can come about. So the great body mind of looking upon the perfect enlightenment of the Buddha and as our role model, and also his vow of helping and guiding sentient beings, that is called the body mind. That's the will. And then we need to gradually keep develop our loving kindness and compassion of sharing the feelings of others, that because that will then help our body mind to become stronger as well. So body mind in fact is a combination of our compassion and wisdom. It's looking upon the perfect enlightenment of the Buddha plus his strong strength in helping and guiding sentient beings. So that's why you can see that it is actually a combination. The body mind is a combination of great compassion and great wisdom. Okay. So while we are during our process of learning, it is important for us to have this great body mind, and then remember to always have this great compassion in sharing the feelings of others. And at the same time, very important also to develop our wisdom. Because without the wisdom, then we may get entangled by our emotion. Because compassion is more care for others. So if the compassion is not guided by our rationality, sometimes you can be very compassionate, but then your wisdom is not thorough, and you tend to become sentimental, and then we start to fall into attachment to our own good deed, or attachment to the suffering of others, and you start to become depressed because you can't help them much. And that's why you find that compassion need to be guided by wisdom. Sometimes we say that our mind, we always say that we have our mind, our body and mind. If you think about our mind in our daily life, if you think about it carefully, in fact we can divide our mind into three three functions. One is the will. So, one is the will. So, if we divide our mind into three sections, then one will be the will, and the other one is the feeling or sentiment or emotion. Feeling or emotion. And then the other one is the rationality. So if we think about how our mind functions, we have the will, we also have like love and care and that small emotional part, and also the rationality part. Some people are stronger in rationality, less in emotion, so they are very cool. Some people are more emotional, are more sentimental, so they are very caring, very loving, but then rational-wise are not that strong. And some people may have maybe very compassionate, but will is not strong enough. And these three actually have to be balanced. So if we go to the negative side, the will is what we call desire. If it's a negative side. Emotion, anger, hatred. And this one is ignorance. If it's a negative side, ordinary person. And so when we practice, we want to transform this will into Bodhi vow. That's the vow, the will, to look upon the perfection of the Buddha's enlightenment and helping and guiding others. Motivation. So usually we say motivation in desire is usually used in a negative sense. Motivation is usually used in the positive sense. And instead of anger, it should be loving kindness. So we want to transform it into loving kindness and compassion. And transform ignorance into wisdom. So we equate these qualities, but usually we got ourselves into this, this, and this. And the practice of the Buddha's teaching is actually to transform this into this, to transform this into this, and to transform this into this. Does it make sense? All right. Okay. So that's why when we learn the Buddha's teaching, it is important. In fact, learning the Buddha's teaching is not complicated. So when we learn the Buddha's teaching, then if we know that, okay, I want to develop my wisdom, I want to develop my compassion, I want to develop my great Bodhi mind, then whatever you're doing, whether you're doing a Buddhism fair or doing an exhibition or Bodhi night or Dharma talk or meditation, basically it should gear towards developing compassion, developing wisdom, developing our Bodhi mind. Then you got a direction. Those different classes that you're attending, activities that you're doing, are just tools. It's just like different subjects, but it gears towards one direction. Then you don't find learning Buddhism so complicated, right? Some people say, oh, learning Buddhism is so complicated. I need to attend meditation class. I need to attend Dharma class. I need to go into generosity. I need to do... They thought it's all individual. They don't link together. But in fact, they are just different methods. They are just methods for us to improve ourselves in what? In these three things. Okay? So these are the three very important qualities, that three important things that we need to improve. And when we are able to perfect the Bodhi vow, loving kindness and wisdom, the perfection of this is the perfection of Buddhahood. Is that right? Yeah. So that's why, as human beings, we all equipped with the potential. The potential. We all have the potential, right? It can be neutral, you see? So it all depends on how we develop it so that we can perfect ourselves to be like the Buddha. So that's why the Buddha wants to guide us, because the Buddha knows that we all have the potential to attain Buddhahood, to perfect ourselves. We're all equipped with the qualities. So now that we know that developing bodhi vow, loving kindness and compassion and wisdom is very important, so how do we try to improve this? And at the same time, not forgetting, because our bodhi vow is to look upon the attainment of the perfection of the Buddha as our goal, and also to help and guide others. So it is important for us to bear in mind this, that attain perfection, perfect enlightenment like the Buddha, and help and guide others. So how can we make sure that while we practice, we do not forget about others? Okay, and so that we don't become just thinking about practice and just for our self-liberation only. Because we want to look upon the Buddha as our example. The Buddha attained enlightenment. Today, we are able to listen to the teachings. We know what causes suffering, and we also know the method on how to end suffering. We need to be very thankful to the Buddha. Luckily, the Buddha attained enlightenment. He did not just go into Nirvana. If he sat under the Bodhi tree, he said, "Oh, I'm enlightened, enter Nirvana, I'm at peace and at ease," then we wouldn't have a teaching today. And that's why it is very important for us to understand that we are able to listen to the Buddha's teaching together today. It is all because of the compassion of the Buddha. Because otherwise, the Buddha can just choose to enter Nirvana. Why did he want to teach? It's out of the great compassion towards all sentient beings. And not only did he teach during his time, he also formed the Sangha order and set rules and regulations for the Sangha order so as to maintain the purity of the Sangha order, and so that the Sangha order can pass on the teachings generation after generation. So the Buddha not only cared about the people during his time, but he also hopes to create causes and conditions for the future beings to be able to encounter the teachings and be able to have a chance to be free from suffering. That shows his compassion, great compassion and great wisdom. And that's why while we are learning the Buddha's teaching today, we should be very, very appreciative. Without this great compassion of the Buddha, we would not know about the teachings today. And that's why as a disciple of the Buddha, as a follower of the Buddha's of the Buddha, we all, whether it's a renounced member or a lay person, we should all have the responsibility of prolonging the teaching. So that not only that we ourselves benefited from the teaching, we hope that others can also benefit from the teachings. And so that's why we should not forget about improving ourselves in our wisdom and compassion, and always think of how to help others. So how can we make sure that we develop this quality and at the same time be able to help others? So the Buddha teach us the practice of the six perfections. So the practice of six perfections, or six paramita, sometimes we call it perfection. Now these six perfection are six items, but they are actually interlinked as well. Okay, some of you probably knows about the six perfections. No, the six perfection. Right, so what is the first one?
Precepts.
Is first one precepts?
Generosity.
Second? Precepts.
upholding precepts.
Patience.
Effort or diligence? Yeah.
Meditation.
Wisdom. Right. So these are the six methods of practice the Buddha teach for us to not only improve ourselves but also help and guide others at the same time. So you find that especially for practice of generosity. So six perfections or six paramita are teachings that the Buddha expound, especially to the Bodhisattva practitioner. So as a person who wants to help and guide others, generosity is the first thing. Right? So now, generosity, of course, you don't just... generosity is not just about... teaching, say, okay, now I just share teachings with you. But generosity, of course, a lot of time we think about generosity as donation or things as such, all right? So now, of course, it can be donation, it can be giving of food, clothing, all these are material things. So giving or generosity can be, there are a few aspects of generosity. One is that we can give material things, so that includes money, clothing, food, accommodation, vehicles, whatever it is, or transportation. So these are giving of material things. So, but important thing is that when we give, we need to give with what kind of mindset? Because remember, these are method of practice. And this method of practice are supposed to help us to improve ourselves in our bodhi vow, our loving kindness and compassion and wisdom. If we forgot about this one, only practice generosity as superficially doing an act of generosity without coupled with this mind, then you find that it doesn't achieve that purpose of developing our wisdom and compassion or purification. So that's why we have to remember, whether the Buddha is teaching about precepts or generosity, some people thought, oh, generosity is only cultivating merits. It's nothing to do with purification of mind. So a lot of people go to the monastery, they say, oh, I want to cultivate some merits. Give donation. They thought by just giving some donation, merits will just come. How does the merits come? Of course, you give you practice generosity, you may accumulate some merits because you are able to help others. But then, the same act, the same amount of money that you gave, but mindset is different. The reward will be different. Reward not necessary in terms of like material reward. A person who give out of joy and a mind of benefiting others, feeling very happy that others receive what he or she given and is able to help them, and they feel very, very happy and do not attach to it. As compared to someone who give and start to feel after they give, they start to wait for people to thank them, and they start to compare with others and see whether they are giving too much or they are giving too little, and things like that. So the mind is not peaceful. So, the same act,
maybe it's $100, same, two person give $100, but the mindset is different. You find that one feel very happy and the recipient are happy and the task is accomplished, everyone is happy. And the other one, yes, the money is given, the task is accomplished, but the person, the giver, the donor themselves are not very happy. The recipient are not very happy as well because there was some argument about the donation. So at the end of the day, the $100 has been given. Yes, the task has accomplished. But do you think the two person gain the same merits? You'll be different. Is that right? So that's why the mindset is very, very important. So when we give, it is important for us to give with a mind of benefiting others. That you give because you see that others are in need. And you really hope that you can help the person to relieve from suffering. That is compassion, loving kindness and compassion. Give with a mind of benefiting others. Not because you got too many things in your garage. And so you feel like you want to give away. Then you say, please take this. I'm very generous. Just take. Deep in your heart is because you want to clear your garage. And your friend may say, no. We have too much in our garage as well. So this kind of giving are not real giving because it's not with the mind of benefiting others. It's more like clearing away the things that you do not want. And the other party may not necessarily need it. Of course, sometimes you want to clear your things, the things in your garage, and it happens that there are friends who really need your thing and your things are in good condition and they are happy. That's fine, right? But if you keep pushing it away and people say no more and you still want to give, then that doesn't look like a giving. Okay? So you can see that if you give with a mind of loving kindness and compassion, and has to be with wisdom as well, that after you give, don't attach, let go. Don't keep thinking about it and thinking how great you are. I'm so great. See, I help this person, I help this person. Everyone here was helped by me. Your arrogance developed. You forgot about reducing your ignorance. That is your self-centeredness, self-arrogance. And so when this pride, this arrogance develops, then you will be looking for some praise. If people forgot to praise you, you're going to get very upset. But if we can practice with wisdom, then we understand that, in fact, we have to be thankful to others. Today, I'm able to practice generosity. It is lucky that there are all these people who want to accept my giving happily. If everyone said, no, we do not need it, how can you practice generosity? So an act of generosity can only happen if I have the skill or I have the things that I want to give and there are recipient who wants it. And it just happened that we met at the right time, at the right place. And the act can happen. Sometimes you may have that skill, but you are in a place where, say for example, some of you may have IT skill. And you got to a place, no electricity, no laptop, nothing. What can you do? Nothing can be done. Right? Your skill cannot be express. And when you want to help others, but you don't have other skill, you only have that skill. And that's why we have to be appreciative that when I'm able to carry out all this good deed, I need to be thankful that there are others who want to receive it. And plus, the skill that we have come from the support of many, many people. The skill didn't just come in a sudden. Think about the primary school that you have gone through, the high school that you have gone through, until the knowledge you have today. It's accumulation of knowledge, accumulation of the help and support of a lot of people. Start from someone, your parents, who teach you 1, 2, 3, ABC, and then get to childcare, preschool, kindergarten, all the knowledge that you build up slowly until what you have today. That's why your knowledge is not your sole property. It belongs to everyone. So where is the fixed entity of your knowledge that allows you to be so proud of yourself? So a person who has wisdom will be able to understand that, and they'll be very modest. And that's why we say that a person who have wisdom, they are actually very modest, and they are very, you find that when you're with them, you feel very comfortable. If someone say, I'm, like for example, there could be some cult leaders, they say, I have supernatural power, and I can do this, I can do that, and they're very arrogant, and you feel, you can sense the fear when you're sitting in front of them, because they say, I can read your mind, you better don't go against me. Then you think about it, I'm looking to end suffering. I want to be at peace and at ease. If you follow a cult leader as such and make you feel scared every day, why do you want to follow a person as such then? The person are not pure and doesn't seem to give you more happiness and peace. Because you have to remember, there are a lot of people who went to cult leaders because they have problem. They want to solve the problem. But then when they go to the cult leaders, it doesn't solve their problem. They give them more mental stress. And they really need to ask themselves, why did I come here? I want to be peaceful and at ease. But now I got more stress and more unease. Should I continue? So when we practice generosity, yes, so generosity, there's generosity of giving material things. It can also be giving of teachings, and also giving of comfort and encouragement. So there are three types of, we usually say there are three types of giving. Usually we talk about giving as just giving of material things, but it can also be sharing of knowledge, especially all of you at the university. You have friends who struggle with their study, who got stuck with their assignment. If you can spend some time, try to teach them, explain, not do the assignment for them, but try to teach them, explain to them, that needs your time and effort. That's sharing of teachings, or comfort and encouragement. Sometimes someone is sad, someone is depressed, they need someone to sit beside them to keep talking to them. Or at nursing home, some elders may feel very lonely, so just sit down and talk to them, take them to the sun, to the garden to have some sunshine, and so on. All this need your time and effort. This is a kind of generosity as well. And so do this with the mind of with loving kindness and non-attachment. A mind of benefiting others and letting go. Alright, the second type, again, upholding precepts. So upholding precepts, why did the Buddha set precepts? Why did the Buddha want to set precepts?
Force people.
Yeah, I'm the Buddha. So now I need to set some rules to control my student. Is that right? Why did the Buddha set the precepts? You know, when the Buddha attained enlightenment, he actually didn't set any precepts. It is only when later, when there are criticism from the villagers, there are people who do things that is obstructing their own practice, that the Buddha start to set precepts. So there are reasons why the Buddha set precepts. Anyone want to tell me? Why? Why did the Buddha say, okay, say for example the five precepts. Why did the Buddha set the five precepts?
Is it because his followers have done something like bad, like stealing?
Okay. So the five precepts, the Buddha set the precepts, what you say, that when his disciple did something wrong, he set the precepts. That's more for the monks and the Sangha members. So for the five precepts, yes, the same thing. When the Buddha set the five precepts, it was because the lay people go to the Buddha and say, we like to be a good student of the Buddha, and how can we make sure that we have happy present and future life? So the Buddha said, if you want to have happy present and future life, follow the five precepts. So basically the five precepts are set, firstly, so that we do not carry out unwholesome deeds that bring ourselves suffering, because you want to have happy present and future life, right? So first is to reframe ourselves from doing unwholesome deeds that's going to bring suffering to ourselves. In fact, more importantly is do not allow our selfish deeds to bring suffering onto others. So the principle behind the five precepts is actually compassion. Do not allow our selfish desire, our selfish action, speech, and thoughts to bring suffering, to impose suffering onto others. And then secondly, of course, it's not to bring suffering to ourselves. Because when we go beyond the line of the five precepts, they're actually unwholesome. That shows that our desire has gone beyond. And that will actually not only bring suffering to ourselves, but also will create obstacle to our own practice. Because when you start to have too strong a desire, or you start to do wrong deed, for example, killing or stealing, you find that you create obstacle to your own practice. In what sense? When you sit down meditating, you think about 10 years ago, you did something very bad, no one knows about it, but in your heart you know about it. When you meditate to a certain level, that remorse, guilt, will come and disturb you. So that's why to have a clear mind, no remorse, no guilt, is very important. And thirdly, by having the precepts, if we can follow the precepts, it actually helps us to restrain ourselves from our scattered mind, and that actually helps us to cultivate a mind that's more calm and under good control, and that set a good foundation for you to practice meditation and finally develop wisdom. And that's why we always say precepts, meditation, wisdom, the three studies. You see? So that's why precepts is setting a prerequisite, help us to collect our mind so that it work within this boundary. Okay? So the principle behind the Buddha's precepts is actually to protect lives. To protect us, to protect others, to protect all lives. Okay? And for the Bodhisattva, the Buddha Bodhisattva precepts, besides reframing ourselves from the unwholesomeness, like the five precepts, it also includes cultivating more wholesomeness. Okay, for example, cultivating more meditation, developing of wisdom, practice generosity, cultivate more wholesomeness. So the Bodhisattva precepts has three sections. One is to reframe from the order unwholesome deeds, right? Similar to the five precepts kind. And then second part is to cultivate wholesome deeds. Practice encourage us to practice meditation, practice generosity, practice patience, and so on. And the third section is to encourage us to proactively helping and guiding others. So the third section, in fact, says that if you uphold the Bodhisattva precepts, And say, for example, on the pathway, you saw an old lady fall down, and you just ignore and you walk away, you breach the precept. So in other words, the precepts are area of studies. If you want to learn to be a bodhisattva, then you find that these precepts will remind you your compassion is not good enough. Someone has fallen down and you just walk past without feeling. That's not right. See, so the precepts are actually like mirror for us to check ourselves. And that's why the Bodhisattva precepts, the third section, especially the third section, it actually tells us to develop our compassion further. So again, you find that upholding precepts, we need to have uphold precepts not just because we do not want to create suffering onto ourselves. More importantly, do not allow our selfish desire, our selfish action to bring suffering onto others. It's to protect lives. Okay? And it is also important for us to practice the precepts with wisdom. Do not uphold precepts until you become very arrogant. It's something very important. Some people, they always use the precepts to look at other people. This person has practiced Buddhism for 10 years, still behave like this. Look, I only practiced for 2 years. I'm so good. So they like to use the precepts as a yardstick for other people. Remember, the precepts is for us to check ourselves. It's a mirror for ourselves. It is not a mirror to check others. That's very important. And as for a bodhisattva to uphold the precepts, it is very important not to look down on others. Even those who did not uphold the precepts well enough, we should have compassion to them that they got carried away by their afflictions. And we should not disdain them, but rather we should try to encourage them. And that's compassion. That you can't stand seeing that this person is doing wrongly and still cannot realize and still fall into the trap further. A bodhisattva can't stand seeing that this person is walking into suffering. And so do not disdain anyone who break the precepts, but rather we should try to compassionately encourage them and guide them, allow them to have a chance to rebuild themselves. That's something very important as in a bodhisattva precept. And that we should also remember that even if we are able to uphold the precepts well, it's nothing to be arrogant about. Like, for example, the five precepts. Some people feel very proud when they are able to uphold the five precepts. But five precepts is just, if you uphold the five precepts, it's just like meeting a passing mark to be a human being. Think about no killing, no stealing, no adultery, no lying, no intoxicants. Okay, you uphold the five precepts, you feel you are so great. But what happens if you don't uphold them? Killing, stealing, adultery, lying, intoxicants. In fact, they are the five rules that everyone should try to uphold. If you don't uphold the five precepts, you are not actually upholding the dignity as a human being. As a human being, we have the sense of shame, we know we have sense of conscience, knowing that certain thing is not right. And if a person just kill as they wish, steal as they wish, have adultery, tell lies, no responsibility to whatever they say, and got themselves drunk all the time, a person as such did not uphold their dignity as a human being. And that's why we need to remember, upholding precepts, by upholding the five precepts, is the only way for us to maintain our human existence. And of course, if we can uphold the five precepts and do better than the five precepts. Besides no killing, we care for lives. Besides no stealing, we practice generosity. Besides no adultery, we encourage faithfulness, honesty among one another. Right? Besides no lying, we always tell the truth, we are trustworthy, and we encourage, we like to give comfort and encouragement to others. And besides no intoxicants, we practice meditation, mindfulness, and develop wisdom. Then that's on top of that. Then besides pass, you probably score distinction. Then you'll be a better human being. And that's why if you look at a human being around us, some people are human being, but life are not that great. Some people are human being, they have better life. It all depends on what we have done ourselves. We are responsible for our own destiny. Okay? So that is upholding precepts. Again, you find that you cannot forget your bodhi vow, your loving kindness and compassion and wisdom. And the third one is tolerance. So tolerance is to endure difficulties and hardship. Now this is very important for our own practice, as well as also in the process of helping and guiding others. So there are a few things that we need to tolerate. One, I think those people, everyone feel difficult, is when others are criticizing us. To be able to be patient and be able to tolerate criticism and comment with a calm and composed mind. Not get carried away and become emotional. Yes. That's where your emotion may start to come, the anger may start to come, your wisdom, your rationality has to control it. Right? And the other thing, the other part that we need to be patient is the environment, the weather, the environment that we are in. So sometimes you find that it may be in an environment that's not very conducive to practice. For example, on a day that's very, very hot, and say, oh, we have to cancel our meditation workshop because it's too hot. Or when it's too cold, or when the wind is too strong, you find that we have all kinds of excuses. But if we understand that within the cycle of life and death, there are more suffering. And as long as we are not enlightened, get trapped in the cycle of life and death is actually the greatest suffering. So we should be diligent in trying to get out of this cycle of life and death. And so a strong wind, a hot weather is nothing. So understand that it is precious to be able to listen to the teachings and to be able to practice. So we need to be patient with the external environment, because external environment at the end of the day, yes, too hot, too cold, but then they just come and go. Important thing that our mind don't swing with them. You see, our mind temperature too hot, our temperature goes up as well. When the wind is too strong, our mind got swing away as well. But aren't you the master of yourself? So we should try to make sure that we know clearly our direction, tem our mind, regardless of what's happening in the natural environment. Then you'll find that wherever you are, you can practice. Otherwise, it's very difficult. And also, we need to be patient in practicing the teaching. To go in depth into the Buddha's teaching, you really need to have patience. Even for your own study, if you study your economics textbook, look at the textbook. Some people say, if I can't sleep at night, I'll just take up a textbook. law textbook. And you read one, not even one page, you fall asleep. What? I'm not sure. Different people have different books, all right? So you find that, but if exam is coming, you can't just look at it and fall asleep. You need to have patience and in trying to try to understand, right? So notice, and that is just your worldly knowledge stuff. And if it's to go in depth into understand the Buddha's teaching, then we need to have patience to understand why the Buddha said so, and gradually go in depth. So if you cannot be patient, then it is difficult for you to calm your mind, make your mind composed, and finally become one-pointed. For example, meditation, the same thing. Meditation, having a battle within yourself, a lot of thoughts, a lot of distraction. You say, oh, what is this? And you just can't have no patience to continue sitting. You will just stand up and walk away. Then you will never experience the peace of meditation. Because every time, 5 minutes, you walk away. 5 minutes, you walk away. When will you have a chance to experience the peace or the joy of meditation? That's why the patience is very much needed in practice and in observing the truth of all phenomena around us. For example, the Buddha said everything is impermanent. So we need to be observant of things around us. Everything arises due to causes and conditions. We need to be observant as well. And it is by doing that the wisdom gradually develop. So patience is very much needed. And patience, so just now we talk about patience, about other people's criticism. Now, talking about patience, we talk about loving kindness and compassion. When you want to help and guide others, you find that you need to have a lot of patience. Because you want to help others, others may not appreciate you. You try to teach others, others find that you are not a good teacher. They can't understand what you say. So you have to find ways to explain to them. And so, as a bodhisattva, in order to help and guide others, patience is very, very important. Sometimes you even have people that you want to help, but they challenge you. But then, as a bodhisattva, rather than become angry, they see the suffering of this person. This person has got caught in their own afflictions. They are actually creating suffering for themselves. So how can I help them skillfully? At the same time, not allow your arrogance to grow. That's very important. A lot of people, after learning the Buddha's teaching, they like to share the teachings, the good teachings with their friends or family members or colleagues. And then they find that, I just can't stand my colleagues. They are so stubborn. I'm trying to give them a lecture. So I said, don't lecture. Because when you start to say, I want to lecture them, your arrogance has developed. And you do not understand that everyone comes from different background. You have attended the Dharma class for weeks, for years, and your colleagues are in totally different environment. They haven't encountered the teachings before. And it is not easy to, in a sudden, just tell them that you should do this. That's why skillfulness is very important. So that's why we say, as a bodhisattva, the skillfulness in sharing the teachings is very important. Because we all have certain level of pride. And you like people to share with you something in a way that is easy for you to accept, at the same time don't lose your pride. If a friend comes to you and say, you're so silly, look, it should be like this, you get very upset. And if your friends just come, I'll show you how I do it. Maybe you can see if mine is right, and they show you. You find that it is, you feel they are not directly saying that yours is totally wrong. See, so it's different way of saying, but then the effect will be different. So, patience, very important. A person without patience can ruin their own cultivation, own merits, very quickly. Because if a person practice meditation, practice generosity, practicing whole precepts, but very short-tempered, then you find that the person's going to ruin themselves very easily. Because you uphold the precepts, you practice generosity, you try to create good rapport with one another, try to be friendly and try to be compassionate. But you're short-tempered. So if someone just don't listen to you, you just feel angry and you start to swear, you start to fight, all wrong things will come. And then you find that everyone will be scared of you because you're too short-tempered. It's like the time bomb. It can bomb anytime. Right? So even though that people know that, yes, I know that he or she is kind sometimes and got good heart and really like to share, but I'm scared. Then you find that you can't help others. Right? Patience is very much needed. And fourthly, is diligence. So diligence is important in all aspects. Without diligence, we won't progress much in our practice. So generosity, precepts, and patience are more cultivation of merits in helping others. Okay? So in terms of this six perfection, remember it has to be guided by wisdom, compassion, and bodhi-mind. But the first three are more towards benefiting others. The last three are more of self-improvement. Because, as we say, we need to make sure that we strengthen ourselves at the same time. If we don't improve ourselves at the same time, then sometimes you feel that you lost your motivation and your energy. Okay, so diligence is very much needed in every aspect of our practice. So diligence means to work hard continuously, not just a short term. Continuously, that your goal is clear, and you got this stamina in continuing. That's very, very important. It's not diligent doesn't mean that you need to go very, very fast. The important thing is steady and last long. Because especially for the practice of the Bodhisattva path, it's a long journey. And that's why sometimes there's practitioners, when they learn about the Buddha's teaching, they feel great and they start to become very diligent, but they become so diligent that they neglect all other aspects of their life. At the end, they feel they don't have the stamina to continue. They dry up themselves. They burn out themselves. So do not burn out yourself. That's very important. Because this journey is very, very long. We need to have the stamina. And how can we make sure that we do not burn out? Understanding the teachings, gain joy of Dharma on the way, then you find that you won't burn out. And that's why to continuously listen to teachings, reflect on the teachings, practice the teaching, gain profound understanding on the teaching will give you support to continue because you gain joy of Dharma on the way. That's very important. So same thing for those of you who are helping at in Unibus. It is very important that besides participating in all activities, organizing activities, you all have to listen to teachings. It is with teachings, listening to teachings, rejoice with the teachings that you feel that what you are doing is beneficial, is meaningful, you find that you have more drive to continue working. If you just organize activities one after another without enriching yourself, nourishment in the Dharma, then you find that sometimes, yes, I have organized this activity, these activities, and I think I have improved myself in my leadership skill, organizing skill, and time management and planning. What else should I learn? Then you just stop there. But if you gain the joy in the Dharma, then you find that I have gained the joy of Dharma. The Dharma has helped me so much, and I really want to use all this activity to share the Dharma with others. then you find that you have this great motivation. And with this motivation, you find that diligence will come. Okay? So, stamina is very important. So, to maintain our diligence, it is important to have good understanding on the teaching and be determined in our practice and to rejoice in our practice. And also, to rest at the right time. You need to have some rest at the right time. But not taking rest all the time. You need to know that, say for example, you can't just go on and on and on for 7 nights you don't sleep. We rest so that we can refresh ourselves, rebuild our energy, so that we can continue with a longer journey. That's very important. Okay? So when you have a rest, your mind on learning the Dharma is still there. I'm just taking a rest. I'm not letting go of the teaching, but just to restore a bit of energy so that you can continue. Alright? So diligence is very important. So diligence, again, why do we want to be diligent? Because we want to learn more, we want to improve ourselves, so and also we want to be able to have more ability to help and guide sentient beings. And we also want to understand that it is by being diligent that we can also develop our wisdom. So you can see that wisdom, compassion and body-mind always has to come in. And then with this diligence, we practice meditation. Okay, so practice meditation, calming our mind, make our mind more focused, understand things more clearly, and finally develop wisdom. So you can see that this actually is quite similar to the Noble Eightfold Path that you have learned before. I'm not sure, some of you may not know about the Noble Eightfold Path, but so the generosity precepts and patience is more towards dealing with others. And diligent meditation, wisdom is more self-improvement. But for all this, it is important that even when we practice generosity, it has to be guided by wisdom and compassion. So although in the beginning, our wisdom are not thorough as yet, but we did have the right understanding. The understanding of cause and effect, the understanding of body vow, loving kindness, compassion, impermanence, causes and conditions. So all those understand that self-centeredness causes suffering, self-arrogance causes suffering. So in the process of doing this, we need to learn to be patient, we need to learn to be compassionate, we need to learn to be modest, we need to remind ourselves not to get carried away by our afflictions, and self-centeredness. All those understanding needs to be there. Okay, so these six perfections can only become perfections when it is guided by wisdom, and also when wisdom attend the perfection. So you find that it is the wisdom has to guide this generosity, guide the precepts, guide the patience, diligence and meditation. In fact, it's wisdom and compassion both has to guide all this generosity, precepts, patience, diligence and meditation. And finally, so initially the loving kindness and compassion wisdom that we have may not be thorough, but they are good enough as a guide. And so that we, whatever we are doing, are not away from this wisdom and compassion and body vow that we are talking about. And finally, when all this become, when all this slowly become perfect, and wisdom become perfect, and this is how the whole thing become a perfection. Okay, so these three are more benefiting others, and these three are more for self improvement. So, and at the end, with this practice, we actually helps our body vow, loving kindness and compassion and wisdom to attain perfection as well. So you find that the body vow, loving kindness and compassion and wisdom guide us in practicing the six paramita. And the six paramita, so by using all the six methods of practice, it helps us to finally perfect our Bodhi vow, our loving kindness and compassion and wisdom, and attain Buddhahood. Can you see that? And that's how we say crossing the sea of suffering is all about helping others. So it is with a mind of helping others that we want to cross the sea of suffering, but especially for the Bodhisattva path, they don't cross the sea of suffering by oneself. They want to be like on a boat, on a ship, carry a lot of people together to cross the ocean of suffering together. And it is by doing this as well that you find that the person, the practitioner, the person himself or herself, free themselves from self-centeredness, perfect themselves in their wisdom and compassion and suffering. At the same time, they help others to end suffering as well. And guide others to end suffering. Okay? Right, is there any question that anyone like to ask? We have 10 minutes for question and answer. Yes?
I'm just wondering, how do you deal like with your feeling like when we are being like underappreciated or like even taken for granted sometimes?
Why me?
Like,
all right.
Yeah,
so like, when you think about why am I being underappreciated, it shows that you have certain expectation. So maybe you are not being underappreciated, but it's just your expectation for the appreciation is higher than what other has given you. This is called the law of relativity. Is that right? So you thought, I think I should be appreciated because others may did show you some appreciation, but you feel that I'm underappreciated. That means that we hope that they can appreciate us to this level, but the way that they show their appreciation is this level. So it means that your expectation is a bit higher than what you have received. So the important thing is that if you start to have that feeling, then you just tell yourself that, well, my initial wish is to do something to help others, or help them. Since my help does achieve the purpose of helping others, the problem has been solved, I should feel happy. Because that was the initial intention. I suppose initial intention, you wouldn't tell yourself that I want to do this so that I can get more praise. But then subconsciously, we always have this expectation of praise and other people's appreciation. So we then check ourselves that what was my initial intention in helping? To help to solve this problem. So now the problem has been solved. The aim has been achieved. Why am I so upset now? So then you try to let go of these thoughts of like I'm being underappreciated. Because when you start to think about that, you make yourself unhappy. You did a good deed, you're supposed to feel happy. But at the end, you're not happy. Then what's the purpose of doing a good deed? Right? So we do a good deed so that others can be happy, we can be happy. Why do you want to do a good deed at the end you feel unhappy every day? So, and you find that when you feel that you are being underappreciated and you start to feel not very happy, then when others, they probably did not realize they underappreciated you, but then because of the upsetness in your mind, the way that you speak to them, the way that you communicate with them, start to feel like you hold a bit of grudge onto them, and then others will start to feel what happened. No one knows what is happening, and you probably do not want to say that. And so, at the end, you may even bring damage to some of the friendship, which is not necessary. So, from the point of learning the Buddha's teaching, we have to tell ourselves this problem comes from myself. that my own expectation, a bit of this pride, or it's in fact a kind of desire, a greed for praise, for some acknowledgement and encouragement. So they did say some things, so that's good enough. I did what I have to do and feel happy. Yeah. So have to slowly let it go. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes.
Sorry, I'm kind of new to Buddhism, but yep. From other like schools of thought, from what I've read, many mystics have, you know, they were born and then they spent their lives searching for enlightenment. And when they do, they see the truth. But my question is, why are we born into illusion in the first place?
Why are we born in illusion in the first place? Well, it has been life after life. So, in fact, this is very difficult to answer, because in Buddhism we say that everything comes together with causes and conditions, and it is just causes and conditions. There's no we or I as such, but we tend to cling on to phenomena that comes together in a stable situation or temporarily stable situation as an I. And it is from there that we start to develop our illusion. The thinking of this combination of things that comes together as a fixed things and develop a self-centeredness. And so therefore, and from there, our greed, anger, hatred, and others are developed. So it is for life after life that this has been continuing, and that's why to break through this chain, we need to have a lot of practice. Yeah. Okay, any other questions?
Yeah. How do you have wisdom initially? Like, how do you know if you're thinking the right thing or if you are misled into something else?
You mean, what is wisdom and ignorance? Yes. So ignorance are usually saying that we cannot understand the truth as it is. So anything that actually coupled with this concept of permanent I want this, I want that, and that everything is unchangeable, that's ignorance. So how do we develop our wisdom in the first place? That's we need to listen to teachings. So development of wisdom comes through a process that the more we listen, after you listen, you think about it in your daily life. Say, for example, today we say cause of suffering come from our attachment. Then you ask yourself, does attachment really cause suffering? Sometimes attachment make you feel very happy. And so you think about it, does attachment lead to suffering? Then you start to realize, yes, if I attach to this, and if this thing is broken, that's when suffering comes. If I'm not attached to it, and I understand that these things are not everlasting, one day become either is ruined or is broken, then your mind is more ready to accept the impermanence, then you find that you have less suffering. So that's why attachment causes suffering. So development of wisdom comes through listening to the teachings, reflecting on the teachings in our daily life, and then practice of meditation, calming our mind, focus, make our mind focus, and with the mind that's focused, then the teachings that we have been reflecting in our daily life can become clearer to us. That attachment causes suffering, or in normal day, we tend to analyze. But during meditation, when your mind is very, very focused, questions that you usually analyze, that you keep thinking, what is impermanence? What is impermanence? Then at that time, it becomes very clear that you breathe in and breathe out, breathe in and breathe out. You start to realize that, yes, where's my breathing? Which point is the same? There's no 1 second it stays. Your cell is rising and falling, rising and falling. there's no 1 second I'm identical. Where am I? No wonder the Buddha says non-self. That's when you start to get insight into the truth. So that's how, through listening to the teaching, reflecting on the teaching, practice the teaching in concentration, and that's when you realize the real wisdom. Okay? All right, any other questions?
Yes. Regarding what Rico said just now, like, so, sometimes you do a good deed just because you want to do it, it's not for asking for of any return or anything whatsoever. But sometimes I feel like, what if you do a good deed and people see you're capable of doing it and they start piling more on you and they keep on piling, and then it just gets a lot because they believe, they see your intention, you want to do it just because you want to like help people or whatever, but they use that to their advantage and pile more loads on you and stuff like that. So
that's where your wisdom has to come in.
So how do we
deal with that? So that's why, that's where your wisdom has to come in. You need to say, for example, you like to help, and when you're free, you like to help more, and people start to give you a lot, then you need to be skillful in making clear that you are trying to help. Then you can also ask the person to come and work together. So instead of just taking it and allow people to power on you, you say, oh yeah, I can help, but you have to come and work together. I teach you how to do it. So you teach them rather than just let them push it to you and then you do it yourself. So you say, well, this is voluntary, or I'm just doing this out of helping. So let's all come and do it together. So that means you try to bring them in, share the responsibility, rather than sort of hold it yourself and get yourself very upset. Yeah. So you need to have some wisdom. So initially we help, and at the end, if you find that there are people who take advantage of that, then you may want to sort of stop doing that and maybe telling the person that I will teach you rather than I'll do it for you. Right? So it's just the same thing as like, if someone keep asking you for money, and initially you feel that this person is in difficulties, you like to give them some money to help them to overcome the difficulties. But whenever they have no money, they come to you. And then you find that they come to you too regularly. And you thought, this should not be the case. The person needs some budgeting budgeting skill. And also need to learn how to do the saving. Then you say, let's sit down. How did you spend your money every week? How much income do you have? And so sit down and help him to do a budget, a budgeting a class, right? And tell him how to spend the money. And certain kind of money may not be necessary. For example, the person may buy things which are not necessary and wasted too much money. So after once or twice they're helping and they find that this person is not using the money in a wise way. So you want to sit down and help him with budgeting and say, don't come to me anymore, I want you to budget yourself. And that's actually, so that's why compassion doesn't really mean that you have to be soft and gentle and just help in a gentle way all the time when everyone requests. Sometimes you may be stern. Compassion can be stern. And that's why it has to come with wisdom. But when you are stern, you don't want to help, you are not having anger in yourself. You know that your intention is to help the person to stand up, himself or herself. And that's still called compassion. Important thing is, do not hold grudge in yourself. Do not hold anger in yourself. Just using different method is still out of compassion, because you hope that at the end of the day, this person become good and have ability to help himself. And that's a better help. For example, sometimes there are people who keep asking you for money, and then you may say, I'll help you to look for a job. And you find a job for him, and he should know how to budget himself. So instead of giving him money all the time, then you look, maybe try to think of a skill that he can learn, because some people are not very good at thinking of what they can do. So maybe you can sit down and think and ask the person, what do you really like to do? You want to go to TAF to learn a skill, or you want to do a carpentry, or you want to do mechanics, whatever it is, and try to find ways for the person, and so that the person finally have a path to walk on. That is also a help. So it's not necessary every time you give them money. That is actually a very passive way of helping. Okay? Any other question? Yep.
I want to know what life is in Buddhism. Is it there's a chain of life, like life after life after life? So what are the forms, like insects and trees? Are they also life?
Only those with consciousness are considered going around the cycle of life and death. So in the cycle of life and death, we say that we are reborn. As long as we're not enlightened, as long as we have not seen the truth, as long as we are still attaching to ourselves, we will still continue our life according to the actions that we have done, the karma that we have done. So if we have done a lot of good karma, we'll have a better rebirth. If we have done a lot of bad karma, we'll have a bad rebirth. All right? So the different forms that we have will be the heavenly beings. So people who have done very good deed, uphold precepts, do meditation, practice generosity, did very well, and they may be reborn as a heavenly being, or the second type will be human being, and then third type is called asura. Asura are beings with merits, but then they have strong jealousy and anger. And then number four is animals, and then hungry ghosts and hell. So there are six different qualities of life. It's more like different qualities of life because of the deeds that we have done.
Killing is a bad thing that will give you karma, right?
Pardon?
Killing?
Yes.
Is a bad thing that will bring you karma?
Yeah.
It's like killing cockroaches and bacteria, killing?
Yes. So killing of cockroaches, insects are still living beings, so we have to try to avoid. Yeah.
What about bacteria? Are they alive?
Bacteria? Depends on, do we classify bacteria as animals?
Like organisms, are they, no? Okay.
So only those with consciousness. Yeah. Alright, so we try to avoid killing, like ants, cockroaches, all these are considered creatures that have consciousness. And so basically we try to just to make sure that we keep our place clean and try to avoid direct killing of these creatures. All right, any other questions? No question. Okay, time's up.